Welcome to Polycast, an official podcast of a Poulton Civilization site.
Daniel Quick.
Makalua.
Imran Siddiqui.
Cardamandua.
With guest co-hosts...
Makaluka Smith.
James Robertson.
Just before you arrived, Michael volunteered you to do the introductions, Annalie.
I always get volunteered for that. How about you let James do it?
I'm sorry, James isn't here right now. You can leave a message at the tone. Welcome to Polycast, an official podcast of Apolton.net. I'm James Robertson. I've been invited on as a guest. I've also got Dan Quick here.
Hello, all.
And Cardamandua.
Howdy.
Makalua.
Hello.
And Michael Lucas Smith, who's upside down.
G'day.
Upside down. No, we're all upside down. He's right side up. Get it straight.
That's right. And I'm also in the future, so, you know, catch up.
Awesome. The future.
You're like one of those recurring guest stars.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, just wish they'd go away. Why is he here again? Who is he?
Well, you only need to worry if you're wearing a red shirt.
I am, actually.
Oh, no. You're doomed.
Do I have a last name? Do I?
James, have you actually listened to Polycast before?
I'm actually, I think, two-thirds of the way through the last podcast I usually listen when I go out to exercise.
James listens to the podcast to try and learn new stuff, but his game hasn't improved for a while, actually, since he started listening to you guys.
Oh.
What have you been doing?
Well, there you go. That's the problem.
The problem is I've been listening to Dan, and my game has improved or not improved accordingly.
Yeah, you need to listen to Makalua.
Just kidding. Uh-huh,
Don't listen to me or Imran.
If it's lower tech than you, kill it.
In the news, there's an overview of Sid Meier's work in the game community on Apple's site.
In the research lab, we looked at random event religions, corporation victory conditions, and player wish lists.
In forum talk, space sabotage is quote-unquote outrageous!
In the Senate, we talked about effective ways to counter stupid archer units defending stupid cities. And also, nuclear tactics. And if we not to pretend it's war games.
Sorry, that was me doing a sound effect. I just let you.
We kind of got that impression today, yeah.
Accessing the vault to hear the Christmas Special 2007 ladies recount their relatives playing the Civilization series.
In Mailbag, we talked about a magazine article published by Cyber Strategy Magazine, where it talks about our Polycast episodes and Dan Q with Associates.
Not attorneys at law.
Not attorneys at law. Here's what's been making news in the Civ community.
Apple.com profiled Sid Meier. I didn't know Apple.com profiled people.
Steve Jobs is our savior. All hail Steve.
What would Steve do?
There you go.
If they're going to profile him, I want to see Beyond the Sword on the Mac.
Yeah. So Apple.com and Civ works really badly on Mac.
Oh, but you got your parallels, right? So much problem.
We've got two Mac people on the show now. Ha-ha, we have numbers. It's kind of a short piece.
We find out that Civ exists because of a dare. Excellent.
Well, it also said that Civ almost didn't exist because when I read that, it looked like he tried Civ once, wasn't really happy with the results, and shelved it for a while.
Mm-hmm.
He's done that with a lot of his games, though.
Yeah, it seems like it's a lot of the ideas, and they almost work, but there's something he can't figure out, so puts it on the shelf for like 5 years or so, comes back and goes, ah, I know.
What about dinosaurs?
I'd say it's been about 5 years, so, all right.
maybe 10 for dinosaurs.
Best idea ever.
Just merge that into Civ 5 and have a civilization of dinosaurs.
I was interested in what he said about the massively multiplayer online games, and how he wants to think about how he can bring the Civ experience into that arena.
Yeah.
It's like, that's interesting. Got news? Email news@apolyton.net or send a private message to Dan Q, the cutest, or one of the other news editors.
Come on into the research lab where we explore concepts that are not in Civ yet, but maybe in the future. Random event religions.
Founded Christianity in 3060, huh? How about that?
Well, I had a hilarious timing the other day in a game where I founded it exactly on 1 AD.
Oh, nice.
Cyrus the Mike started this thread. He wants it so that religions are founded every game by random events, so you could end up with even more religions. No, I don't like the idea of having it tied to random events because you're adversely impacting a key strategic element of religion where you're researching a particular technology and you're the first to research a particular technology in order to be able to found one. Though if it were a mod, not a standard gameplay element, that's okay.
I kind of thought that having it work where you could have a random event cause a schism that then created a second religion might work, but I didn't like the idea either, and the whole idea of having more religions seemed to me like it would make gameplay harder because it would just be more stuff to track.
Yeah, and I thought that the spreading of religion is more like what he's talking about here. A religion makes it to another city. That is fairly random, and that is more realistic. But there is no effect of that religion suddenly entering a city, and maybe that's something that should be changed. And you never really see one religion spreading to a city that already has a religion randomly. Maybe that should happen too, because that's when you really do get unrest. All the opposite, like when the Islamists and the Christians met up and started trading technology. You know, you have this giant tech boost because these two worlds collide. So it can be both a positive and a negative thing, but I don't think it's founding religions, it's just the spread of religions.
When I found a religion and I spread the religion to my other cities, I like to have more than one religion in my city. So I can build those temples and I can build those monasteries.
And they have the opposite effect where sometimes spreading it to another city fails. So why not do it that way too?
Yeah, I think the difficulty you might get into is this is something that I've heard come up on this podcast before, actually. The whole thing about historical accuracy versus gameplay is the more complexity you layer in here, the harder it's just going to be to play the game.
The voice of regurgitated reason?
And if you're having random events founding religions and you've got all of these religions, then maybe almost every Civ in the game will end up having a religion. You just take it for granted.
Yeah, one thing that might be interesting as an option you could turn on is, again, having the idea that you could have a random event cause a schism, which then causes some kind of civil war where you lose cities and they become their own nation or something. I could see that being an interesting random event that you could turn on as an option, you know, like sometimes you turn on Raging Barbarians, you know, having that as an option you could turn on might be interesting.
Yeah, it's almost a cultural thing. If the two civilizations have different religions and you spread your religion into their cities, then that is really pushing your culture. So, you know, if it's a state-sponsored religion, that is a kind of warfare, and the game doesn't really model that.
James, you had equated it to being able to turn on barbarians or not at the beginning, and I would just say have that possibility of a schism as a random event. So if you have random events on,
okay,
it's a possibility, but I guess the thing to then explore would be what would the conditions be in going on and how likely would it be that it would happen.
It'd also be a pretty annoying thing to have happen to you, honestly. I mean, if you were going along and you had 7 or 8 cities and suddenly you lost 3 of them because they decided to become schismatics, I can see where that would be pretty irritating.
But that's what you've got military for. You just go take them back. They'd only be barbarian for a few turns unless you don't have the military might to recover.
Proposed corporation victory condition by Frenzyfall was also a suggested topic for Polycast by JKP1187. And you can hear JKP1187 in episode 10 of Modcast, now available. Frenzyfall says there should be some kind of way to win the game through corporations. How about a global corporate takeover? If you spread a corporation founded by you to X percent of the world, then you could win the game. Corporations come in late enough, making it a fairly difficult victory condition, unquote. I think it's a fairly bad victory condition, as described. I'm open to the possibility of not a corporation victory condition, but an economic victory condition, but needs to be well balanced so it's not too tasty of a target and not too difficult either.
Yeah, I think economic victory makes a lot of sense. If you've got this giant trade network and you're behind on score, but you're friendly with everyone, but people won't vote for you to win it in the UN, then getting a whole bunch of cash and buying the world.
It's late enough in the game, though, that this isn't going to come up very often. Certainly most games I play don't even get that far.
That's because you win, right?
That could be one story, yeah.
I think the problem is that if you're playing on a higher difficulty level against the AIs, they make ridiculously large amounts of money out of nowhere, so any economic victory would be way too easy for the AI.
And if you tie it to corporations, that's so late in the game.
Yeah, I wouldn't tie it to corporations. Tie it to something else.
Also, aren't the corporations somewhat unbalanced? From the few games I've played with corporations, it seems to me that some of them are better than others, too.
Oh, God, Sid Sushi. That's hilariously unbalanced, but it's great.
Yeah, spreading a corporation into a quote-unquote friendly neighboring sieve. It's a way to attack their economy because it just sucks money out of them.
Yeah, every time I've done that to you, you've been really irritated.
Yeah, yeah. House.
Well, historically, in the extended Civ family, we first find an economic-based victory condition in Alpha Centauri, and that's where if you have enough energy reserves, roughly equivalent to what it would take to mind control all the remaining cities on planet, you can win by cornering the global market, but it takes 20 turns to achieve and can be prevented if during this time the faction's headquarters falls to an enemy. So there, you already have several conditions that have to be met. But I think the economic-based victory condition is going to be tested, practically speaking, on consoles anyway, when Civilization Revolution is released next month in Europe and in July in North America, where you have to collect X number thousand of gold pieces. I believe right now it's 15,000. It was at 20,000, so that could still change. And building the World Bank Wonder, although one doesn't have to come before the other. But I think a big difference between those two is that the cost for an economic victory goes up because you require an energy credit sum that is sufficient to mind control all bases on planet, whereas in CivRev, that's going to remain static because you have a set X number thousand of gold pieces and then require to build the World Bank Wonder at the same time. So I think if we do have an economic-based victory condition, it needs to be one that's percentage-based as opposed to an absolute value, and there needs to be more than simply one step. There needs to be several conditions to get to, and those conditions need to be something that you can start hitting early on enough in the game so it can be a meaningful victory.
So corporations could be a piece of that, but not all by themselves.
Exactly. A corporation could be an option, like the third of three possible options, but you only need two of three.
It could be something like you have to have 66% of trade relationships around the world. So, in other words, you have to be really friendly with everyone and trade lots. And corporations could be a way to boost those trading networks.
True, but I really think it should be 67%.
Well, we could go 66.6 repeating or something like that. I'll meet you halfway.
But what? And then the game ends because you've achieved the sign of the beast. Well, you know that. No.
Actually, wasn't that supposed to be a transcription error and it's actually 616?
Yeah, that's what I thought too. And that's why I could never summon the devil when I was a child. It's because it's the wrong number. What about the spy victory? Someone brings that up again in this thread.
Oh, yeah. Addled Platypus brings that up. He says, no go for an economic victory, just like a spy victory. Well, there's certainly a more substantial portion of the game that can be impacted by espionage as opposed to corporations, but I don't know about a spy-based victory, though.
Spies are already unbalanced. You can use them to win the game in any way you want if you focus entirely on the thief economy.
Maybe something that's more generalized, like maybe an espionage-based victory, not spies specifically, like actually dealing with the spy unit, but even then.
So basically, if spies helped you get your economic victory or your conquering victory or whatever victory, it is technically a spy victory.
There you go.
But there is something to be said when you get to the point in the game where you can see everything, everywhere. What's the point of continuing? You know, you've got a whole bunch more effort to go to actually win in some manner, but you've won, right? Your score's going to be high already. You've got ridiculously large number of espionage points to give in at that point.
Yeah, why can't you build some sort of Big Brother AI thing in the modern era and have that be a win condition? I see all that you do. Yes, you, over there, stop that.
This is a family-friendly show! player wish lists for a Civilization V. Timu Reskip, I know I'm not pronouncing the last name properly. Timu, first thing he or she talks about is replicating the historical eco-socio-reality and put the player under those alternatives. You replace the simultaneous start with the AIs. You don't start in 4000 BC. You start before the invention of agriculture, right at the time of the first hunter-gatherers, and it would go until the end of the 19th century, and you put the player to face the historical situation and to try to change the history. That point, I would not support that as a main gameplay change. Again, sounds like something for a mod, because for me, Civ is not about recreating history, but reimagining it, and then maybe secondarily revisiting it.
Well, it also would pretty much suck if you were saddled with the Amazonian civilization. Don't you just pretty much get to watch yourself splattered?
Montezuma!
Oh, goody, I get to have spears when the other guys have machine guns.
Well, you know, those spears do a lot of damage against tanks.
That's right.
Don't count yourself out just yet.
There was a mod I'm forgetting the name of. It does it a little bit in Rise, this Rise and Fall, but it did it in some other mod where you started out and you had to research things like hunting and gathering and that kind of thing. And while every once in a while that was an interesting thing, if you had to do that every game, it would kind of get annoying. Because it's from Civ 1, we're all used to the idea that you are a civilized tribe, not some hunter-gatherers, and you start from there and go on.
Timu also suggests make a new society modeling table from the Alpha Centauri version, where each Civ has its own unique variables based on natural resources and knowledge. Political model allows only certain economic and religious models and vice versa. Try to catch the reason for societies rather than putting them all into the same mold.
The reason for societies? Go forth and multiply? There's no reason for any of our societies.
It sort of already got towards that in Civ 4, where you had different aspects of your society that you controlled with different things instead of being one broad government. I guess he wants even more detail in that. Because there's actual pluses and minuses you got to your production or your efficiency in Alpha Centauri. I mean, maybe that's what he's after. That extra tweaking your civilization's bonuses, sort of.
But that's what the civics are about, in a way. If you want to be communist Russia, then you can be communist Russia.
Yeah, but there was this other scale of how efficient you were at researching and how efficient you were at producing things. It was separate from just that kind of civics thing.
Yeah, India kind of cheats like that because they get the fast worker.
But how was that in Alpha Centauri? Was that all micromanagement hell, or was that actually managed not too badly?
No, that was fairly easy to manage because there were certain combinations that had a good synergy together or were better for warring, better for peace. It was civics, but it was a little more detailed civics. I'm probably not explaining that correctly, but people who have played Alpha Centauri know what I'm talking about.
That's okay. I'll forgive you for using the S word.
Yeah, all three of them will know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Oh, Dan.
Not me. Dan, quick. No hate mail. Crap.
Where you've got available resources either internally or through trade externally, that can determine considerable factors such as whether or not you can build particular units that can impact your empire's health and happiness, and whether you can build particular wonders more quickly or not.
Whether you restart the game, I have no bronze or iron.
But that's where the world builder comes in.
Now I have 10 iron.
But because of factors like that, I don't see societies right now being all in the same mold. Now, Timu does mention knowledge. I wonder, Timu, are you getting at the independent technology trees for each civilization? If so, you may have something there. I'm still intending to check out the Twilight of the Arnar expansion pack, the second and final one for Galactic Civilizations 2 Dreadlords from Stardock, because that's in that expansion.
Okay, the separate thing I was talking about adjusting, let me try to explain that better.
Okay.
Your civilization, I'll call it that, in Alpha Centauri, you were rated on how friendly you were to the planet, how efficient you were, which helped with your economy. You didn't lose as much money to maintenance and things like that. Then you had a science rating for how efficient you were at researching and an industry rating for how good you were at producing these. If you had bonuses to those, things like research would cost less, building units would cost less. So it was in your favor to try and get your society to have more positive than negative in that. I mean, sometimes you might go for a negative in one to get a positive in the other. But that may be what he's trying to get at with society modeling table. He wants to be able to have those different bonuses to the different civics that you take so that you can mold your civilization a little better.
Well,
you sort of already do it with civics, but...
But who can honestly say that a space victory is a real victory if you end up on Alpha Centauri and have to look after the planet like some sort of Earth 2 series or something crap like that?
Oh, you don't have to. You can go and bulldoze over it if you want to.
Giant worms high on spice will jump out of the ground and eat you if you don't look after the planet.
That's why you build really strong units. And you flamethrower them.
Wow. Have you been watching some B-grade science fiction movies recently there, Mike?
Yeah, maybe.
Damn it.
Timu's other suggestion. Oh, only one city can build units at a time, and the units number depend on the number of cities.
No, thank you.
Whoa, absolutely not.
I'm with the guy New Dog who was commenting in the thread right after that, which is, I had basically a WTF kind of reaction to that.
Yeah.
If you want that, play the one city challenge kind of thing.
And lose.
Lose horribly.
There's no way you could get a military up like that.
Oh, yeah, there is one way. What you do is you get the world builder going.
I don't even understand the idea. I mean, what is it? Do all your other cities go on strike when one city is building?
They're on holidays.
It reminds me, if anyone's ever seen Whose Line Is It Anyway, either the British or the U.S. version, and there's a game where someone has to be standing, another person has to be sitting, and the other person has to be leaning. So it's like, oh, only one city can build a unit. Oh, I can't be. Oh, better build a building. Oh, someone else is switched to a building. I can't build it anymore.
And the proof is that that game never works well.
This is Forum Talk, where we investigate hot civ issues in the forums.
It's Forum Talk, Forum Talk. Everyone talks about Forum Talk.
You guys bring in your no singing rule right about now.
Yes.
Space sabotage is outrageous. At least that's what they say.
Why? See, it's one of those things that when you're doing it to the AI, you have no complaints about it, but when the AI does it to you, then all of a sudden it's not fun.
I think his problem is that he doesn't think it's realistic.
You know there were spies involved in space race. Come on, the Russians back in the day somehow managed to build their own shuttle thing that looked strangely almost exactly like ours.
Yeah, but the Russians were their own worst enemy when it came to the space race.
We're our own worst enemy sometimes.
Yeah, they lost that entire space command center by using unstable nitrogen fuel. That's not a secret you want to steal.
Because this guy played a game where no sooner did I complete the high-end spaceship components and they were destroyed by AI spies. What if Firaxis have things when it makes such games a misery? Is there some way that I can edit this to never happen again?
Yeah, take out the space race victory.
How about you defend yourself from sabotage? That's not too hard.
You build things like security bureaus and the anti-spy stuff.
Intelligence agency?
I mean, to some extent, that's like deciding, gee, I'm really angry that the AI marched in with two swordsmen and took my undefended city. I didn't know I had to build archers.
I hate when that happens.
Joke's on them. They could have taken it with one swordsman. Idiots. Plinko 16, which you may be hearing from the people who do the prices right pretty soon. I don't know if you use that username or not. Saying that apparently your espionage ratio with whomever is sabotaging you is very poor, so they can keep doing it to you. Figure out who it is by looking at the EP ratios that show up when you mouse over the leader names on the scoreboard. If you know who the perpetrator is, find a city that's not needed for space parts, build some espionage buildings, the intelligence agency, the security bureau.
Scotland Yard, don't forget that.
Yeah, that too.
Put that on your border, and you catch all the spies as they try to come in.
Well, I put Scotland Yard in whatever city already had the greatest espionage generation at that point.
Doesn't really help you as much, though.
Also, if you hate espionage that much, you could just decide not to play Beyond the Sword.
So there you go.
Go back to Warlords.
J-Man suggests both spies can detect any other spies. True. Place them on the border where the AI has to pass them. According to JKP1187, and I think he's right, that this only works if the enemy spy ends its turn on the border square in which you've stationed your spies, so the best bet is to station spies in all of your cities. Because an enemy spy can sabotage a project from any city in your empire, not just the city building the project or one of the cities building one of the components.
You could do the submarine thing, though, and put a spy on every square in your...
Is it a yellow submarine?
No.
We have a rule against that, John.
That was humming.
We still have a rule against that if you're Dan.
Oh. There you go. I haven't answered everything.
Welcome to The Senate, where we discuss game strategy.
In this thread, we have a question asked by Zero. How do you counter archery units effectively if you don't have a unique unit that gets a plus to archery?
Lots of units.
Lots of units.
Tanks. Oh, wait.
Horse archers have a decent chance of retreat most of the time, so you don't lose quite so many units.
And they can get to where you need to go faster.
Mm-hmm.
Now, actually, I think this might have been spurred on by the situation where they're trying to build up an army to take a city, and the AI just keeps building archers to defend it, and it's a stalemate. Well, at that point, what you do is you go and attack one of their other cities.
And then they stupidly move all their units out of that city to the new city, and there's only a couple of archers left, and then you can take the city you were trying to take.
It's actually a really good way to play it. I've done it a couple of times.
Like, look, shiny bait over here. Come here, come here.
Yep.
Then the horse archers come up. Suckers.
I guess at that point, if that's their last city, it's their capital, and they're pouring archers into it, just go and destroy every bit of infrastructure they have and end the war.
Yep.
And you've set them back like 50 turns. You can come back later when you've got better tech and finish them off.
Yeah.
Yep. Keep them at bay. Pillage, pillage. I have a few of them even set a square or two away from the city, so if they try, for example, I notice the AI likes, you take three or four of their cities or what have you, or even one, and it's the middle of a war, and sometimes they'll spend the time building a settler.
Oh, yes, all the time.
I'm like, what? Are you serious?
Someone thought it was a good strategy. I think people also forget, and I remember because of the older civs, that you should spread your units out around the city to take up all the squares that the city could be drawing its production from. And that way they can't keep building all these archer units. They've got no hammers.
Yeah, you can starve the city down to like one or two population that way. And then they can't build fast enough, and then you can finally get in.
But you're better off just coming back later.
Depends. If it's the last city on my continent, yeah, sure, I could come back later. But if I'm about to have to go turn around and attack somebody else or defend myself against somebody else, I need to finish that like now.
John C. Nunn suggests any unit with the flanking 2 promotion, immune to first strikes that archers have. Units with city raider, they bonus against everything in the city, including archers. And units with cover, this gives a bonus to those units fighting archers.
CPI card says, let's talk nukes, which our guests will probably really like. He wants to talk about offensive and defensive tactics on multiplayer games.
Well, the best defense is a good offense.
And the best offense is a sneak attack, so the best defense is a sneak attack.
Lots of nukes.
Lots and lots and lots, apparently.
You know what? The worst part about nuking is the unrealistic global warming that spreads everywhere after using them. And that's just annoying.
Yeah, we talked about that last time.
Yeah, and the actual reduced amount of damage the nuclear weapons have, it's very bizarre. But I'm not sure if they covered it in this thread, but the best way to defend against someone with a large nuclear arsenal going to war with you is to stop having large stacks of units, spread them out across your land.
So relocate your stack of doom?
Yeah, but then if they have an actual army, they can come in and take you, too.
Yeah, but I found that most of the time when somebody nukes me, it's because they don't have an army. If they had an army, they probably wouldn't have nuked me. They would have just come in with that army. I've always seen nuclear weapons used as a last resort sort of thing. Okay, I'm screwed. I don't have enough military to beat this guy. Maybe I can hammer him down with the nukes and get him on my terms.
I don't know. I've been known to use nukes just out of sheer spite.
Well, that's definitely the primary use.
I use it out of pleasure. I get a great amount of joy of nuking somebody I hate.
I used to not use nuclear weapons because it would make the whole game freeze up until the animation had finished. But now that it's fast, I don't have a problem.
I'm good to see that you have such a highly developed sense of ethics there.
It's a game.
Yes, this isn't how Michael thinks in real life.
Yeah.
I assume.
You don't work with him. This is one of those things that's kind of like corporations for me. I almost never get to this late stage of the game.
Oh, I actually pushed for nukes once in a game where I didn't have the military might, and the person I was playing with, which wasn't you, James, was a novice. And the terrible scenario happened where I said, if we wipe these people out, we can win with dominant victory. And then I said, don't go to war with them because they have a giant army. However, between the time I said we could win and the time I said don't go to war with them, they went to war with them. And at that point, we were fighting a stalemated war. It was a giant world war, them versus us. And the only way out of it was some sort of technology that could jump that military stalemate, and it was nukes. It turns out that you have to nuke every city in a civilization 2 to 3 times before they'll capitulate from just a nuclear attack and no troops, which is ridiculous. I think in real world, it took 2 nuclear weapons to make a vast military empire surrender. So nuking every single city in a civilization more than once, that's a lot of nukes.
And you loved every turn of it.
Yeah, it was great. So the game isn't really balanced as a nice, you know, nuclear reaction. There's not enough aghast, you know, there's not enough, oh my god, I've been nuked, and they can keep doing it every 2 turns. There's no reaction like that from the AI. It doesn't take into account your ability to continue to produce and its inability to stop you producing.
Yeah, the last time I played a game where I had nukes and I was doing that to try to stop a war, I had dropped, I think it was 3 or 4 nukes on, I can't remember which civ it was. I think it was the Aztecs. And all that happened was that each nuke made them more angry. They wouldn't surrender, they just got angrier.
That sounds like the Aztecs.
Yeah, and so when I was doing it, it was against Russia, and they're a fairly reasonable race normally when it comes to warfare, but yeah, when you're nuking them, the AI doesn't realize the nuclear scenario is a complete loss. If they don't have nuclear technology, and you do, and you can produce a nuke every turn, you have to surrender. There's no way you can win.
So if you're not able to head off the possibility of nuclear weapons through United Nations resolution, and you find out, oh, Manhattan Project's been built, uh-oh, for your own defense, I guess coming from a builder perspective, in part, bomb shelters.
And SCI if you can build it.
Yeah, if you've got the tech.
Yeah, the SCI is great, but that really doesn't belong in civilization because it doesn't exist yet.
This is gameplay versus realism, yeah. See?
There you go.
There we go.
But that's the kind of nice thing about nukes, and I think that it's the ultimate military situation that near the end game, everybody should have them, and no one's really willing to go to war because someone might use them. And that totally changes the gameplay. When you stick SDI in there, that's not an issue anymore. Now I have SDI, I can nuke everyone. And that is future tech. That is not real world technology. There's no unbalancer for nuclear weapons. When 2 big states have nukes, it's a stalemate. You can't go to war. That's what the Cold War was.
Well, I think that goes exactly back to what Dan was saying, though. It's a gameplay versus realism. A stalemated game where nothing's happening just isn't that fun a game.
Yeah, probably a good point there.
So we won the Cold War out of boredom?
Everybody got bored, that's right.
You have to win the game another way. When you get to that nuclear stalemate, in real life it was won through economics. One country collapsed its economy and the other one didn't. And that's a valid way to win Civ, isn't it? So, I don't have a problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a question here, prior to having SDI, can you prevent an attack altogether? Yeah, suck up to the AI. They're not going to nuke you if you're friends.
Ugh, I hate that, though. There's a good way for competitive play to have other people give you advice. That's the Appleton University.
And we would find that where? Jeez.
Appleton.net/forums?
Really? Wow. How could I figure that out from Appleton University?
I don't know.
Sometimes I wonder.
This is a Vault segment with topics cut from earlier episodes, but I found relevance again later. From the Polycast Christmas Special 2007 with Makalua, Cardamandua, Condor 223, and K. Madeline.
Dad plays Civ. He has played since Civ 2. I was already hooked on it, and I went home for Christmas, and he was playing it. I was like, you like that game? He's like, oh, yeah, I play it all the time. He had me mod the rules for him. He was afraid to touch them, and I told him about something I had done. I forget what I had done. So he's like, oh, can you change this for me and that for me? So he had me tweak all these things for him.
That sounds like you have some technical experience.
Oh, no, that was just really easy. You just go into the text file and change the numbers. And there's some in XML that's really easy to change in BTS, but some of it is really complicated. And I love that everything in it is moddable. Most of it I can't do myself, but thank goodness that there are people out there that can and that share their knowledge and that a lot of it's already been done, or they will tell you how to do it, or a lot of times there's tutorials already out there. But, I mean, if it wasn't for the forums, I'd be lost. They chose to make it very, very flexible, but that also meant that you have to know what you're doing, and I kind of don't. But there are people that do. Hubby wants to mod things to be historically accurate. Like, he'll want to have, three UUs for every civilization, like one for different eras, but they have to match what would be logical.
Yeah.
And he has to come up with something for the civs that didn't exist anymore. So, that'll take him a couple of years. He'll be done by the time they release Civ 6. I just wish I could pick the color of my Civ and my opponents for each game. You know, like, if I have the white guys and the light gray guys in the same game, it's too confusing.
Oh, yeah. I agree with that.
Especially when it's shadowed over. Which color is that?
Everybody was shades of yellow last time, so I could tell if I had visitors or not.
And I want an option for a random AI, except for don't put Monty in, don't put Catherine in.
Yeah.
In the mood to deal with her.
I agree. Totally. Because I love random AI, but I hate Montezuma.
If I don't want to deal with Kathy, there's a way around that because I can pick Peter and then I know she won't show up. But Monty is the only Aztec.
Yeah.
So I can't make sure he's not in there.
And he almost always is.
So I think every Civ should have two leaders.
It's cool that your dad plays. My dad's watched me play before.
Yeah, we're a weird family. We're pretty funky. He played Civ 4 for a while, but now he's hooked on Galactic Civilizations. I think they're on version 2 now. Mom's addicted to freestyle. She's kind of stuck in the 90s or whatever.
Yeah, my mom was Spider Solitaire with the card games, but she did used to play Civ 1 back originally. Yeah, so she likes to play the mystery-type game things that they do that are, they have to point and click, like old adventure games.
My dad played old-timey Civ on Nintendo back in the day, so he kind of likes it, but he hasn't gotten hooked onto the computer versions yet.
Call in today.
In North America, the number is 301-637-7659. That's 301-637-POLY. In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
You can Skype us at the Polycast or email us at polycast@polton.net.
For more information on Polycast, our sibling show, Modcast,
log on to the series' official website at polycast.polton.net.
Greetings from the mailbag, where we address listener questions and comments.
Cyber Strategy magazine, I have a copy of a special they did specifically dedicated to Civilization IV. The magazine is in French, 82 pages, published last fall, and it does talk about
Apolton and Civ Fanatics, and not only that, but it actually talks about Polycast.
Ooh.
So the first known
in a magazine
mention of Polycast in print.
Wait, did they say something nice?
Yeah, that's a question. Was it nice, or what the crap is this?
No, it was nice. So what I did is I typed in what they've written, and of course it's never a perfect translation, but you get kind of a general idea. So I'm just going to read it as the translation is. Hair to a long series of programs on radio devoted to civilization by Dan Q. Polycast is a podcast in English which offers two shows per week. Animated by Dan Q and Associates, he concentrates on the news, has policy debates and dialogues with various personalities of Civ, such as John Schaefer, Derek Paxton, and Barry Cottle.
Dan Q and Associates? Sounds like a law firm.
Apparently.
That's just what I was thinking. When did you join a law firm? Wait.
Well, I'm a guest, so apparently I'm happy not to be an associate.
I'm worried about being associated now. Actually, I got some feedback for you. I think this podcast is great, and it's a real credit to the community.
Aww.
I got your feedback right here.
Whoa!
He did talk about sucking up to the AI earlier, so he's just practicing.
I've got some banana.
Oh.
How did I know that was going to be the next thing?
Because James and Michael love podcasts so much, they actually recorded their own podcast today, and then they turned around and did Polycast.
We do Industry Misinterpretations. It's a technology podcast. It's not about gaming. Focused pretty much on the small talk development language. So if that's where you are, you might be interested.
So, James, you're going to get to witness the magic that is somehow reducing 1 hour and 48 minutes down to 40 minutes.
It's Dan's favorite thing to do.
Well, just ask James. We don't do this much editing at all.
No, not even close.
We hit the record button and we start talking. And that's it.
Sometimes we even have topics.
Thank you for listening to episode 45 of Polycast, an official podcast of the Polton Civilization site. This episode, 100% Les Imran.
Woohoo!
Yay! Oh.
It's a requirement to cheer at that, right?
I thought it was.
That's how you become an associate.
So because Imran was away, our returning guest co-host, elevated to regular panel status for this episode, lucky him, Michael Lucas-Smith.
Bye.
We were also joined by first-time guest co-host James Robertson.
Hey.
Joined by Mackie as well.
Bye-bye.
And Cartamandua.
See ya.
And I'm Dana Cook, known as Dan Key. I did hear the start of episode 84 of Industry Misinterpretations there, Michael, when you thanked me and Polycast for, what was it, with a drive to make the show more professional and have...
Yeah, actually, that's backfired. Our listeners has dropped.
No.
Oh, no. Oh.
That's what comes from being an associate.
I am not on Skype right now. Please leave a message. Your voice will be recorded by... Thank you.
Someone's got an away message on. It might be James.
Can we talk to her some more? Forget James.
That female voice probably plays a better game of Civ than I do anyway.
Is that the sound of the segment sucking?
Oh. Welcome to Polycast, the official Polycast.
Get to everyone.
Official Blissicast.
I'm only on my third cup of coffee. There's only so much clever in me.
And he's in marketing.
No.
Who was that I read that, was that, like, talked about on Polycast? Maybe I'm just reciting things I've heard on Polycast now. That's really great.
We get into your head.
Yeah.
All your brainer belongs to us.
Sometimes we get shortchanged.
Record date?
May 24th, 2008.
Sound clips copyright Civilization 4 and the Warlords and Beyond Sword expansion packs. Copyright 2008, a Polyton Civilization site at apolyton.net.